C3 Radio aus dem Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung. Am 30. März 2022 hat es eine Online-Konferenz der ÖFSE zum folgenden Thema gegeben: Nachhaltigkeitsfragen in der Kakao-Wertschöpfungskette. Wird die EU-Gesetzgebung zur Sorgfaltspflicht einen Unterschied machen? In der heutigen Ausgabe von C3 Radio berichten wir über diese Konferenz. Es begrüßt Sie Jürgen Plank. Der Hintergrund zum Thema: In den letzten Jahren ist die Nachhaltigkeit der globalen Kakao-Wertschöpfungskette zu einem wichtigen Anliegen von Produzentinnen und Verbraucherinnen geworden. Dies bezieht sich auf alle drei Dimensionen der Nachhaltigkeit: Ökonomie, Soziales und Umwelt. Erstens hat sich das existenzsichernde Einkommen der Kakaobauern trotz mehrerer Initiativen zur Lösung des Problems nicht ausreichend verbessert. Die meisten Kakaobauern leben immer noch unterhalb der Armutsgrenze mit sehr niedrigem Lebensstandard. Darüber hinaus hat das Engagement für Umwelt und Soziales in Rohstofflieferketten, einschließlich Kakao, zugenommen. Herausforderungen in Bezug auf Entwaldung, Arbeits- und Sozialethik im Kakaosektor beeinflussen das Konsumverhalten von Kakao- und Schokoladenprodukten. Im Laufe der Jahre haben mehrere Corporate Governance-Fragen auf Sektor- und Unternehmensebene dazu beigetragen, die Nachhaltigkeit des Sektors zu verbessern. Dennoch, wichtige Menschenrechts- und Nachhaltigkeitsfragen sind ungelöst geblieben. Kakao ist somit einer der Sektoren, der in den laufenden Diskussionen über die Gesetzgebung zur Sorgfaltspflicht von Unternehmen in der Europäischen Union eine wichtige Rolle spielt. Interessanterweise fordern führende Kakao- und Schokoladenunternehmen selbst eine Regulierung des Sektors, um gleiche Wettbewerbsbedingungen für alle Akteure zu schaffen. Damit zur Studienvorstellung der ÖFSE-Forscher Hannes Groß und Jan Krumiller: Sustainability in the Cocoa Chocolate Global Value Chain – From Voluntary Initiatives to Binding Rules. Dazu leitet die Moderatorin ÖFSE-Forscherin Karin Kübelböck ein.
When we talk about cocoa and chocolate, actually concentration is the word that comes to my mind. In preparing this conference, I found that 60 seems to be a number to remember, because more than 60% of cocoa comes from only two countries, namely Cote d'Ivoire and Ghana. 60% of cocoa processing is done by only three multinational companies: Barry Calbo, Cargill and Olam. And 60% of cocoa beans are imported to Europe. Less than 10% of the profits are generated in cocoa producing countries. This low income of cocoa producers has severe consequences in terms of poverty, in terms of child labor and in terms of environmental impacts.
Jan Krumiller beginnt mit der Präsentation der Studie.
So let's start with giving you a brief overview of the Cocoa Global Value Chain, or GVC. Here we look at the global map of cocoa, and what we see is that cocoa production, or the production of cocoa beans, is located primarily in the global south, and in particular in Cote d'Ivoire and Ghana. And both of these countries actually produce roughly 60% of global cocoa bean output each year.
Die globale Kakao-Wertschöpfungskette besteht aus zwei zentralen Produktionsschritten, so Krumiller.
Processing or grinding, where the intermediate cocoa products such as cocoa liquor, butter, powder are produced and then sold to chocolate manufacturers who sell their products mostly to retailers. And chocolate manufacturing is also almost exclusively done in the global north and also relatively concentrated with the largest six companies roughly controlling 40% of the global market share. We want to give you also a brief overview of the key economic, social and environmental sustainability issues. And the key economic sustainability issue is low and unstable income of farmers.
Die Marge der Kakaobäuerinnen ist niedrig und zudem in den letzten Jahrzehnten gesunken, von rund 27% in den 1980er Jahren auf rund 9% in den 2000er Jahren. In den letzten Jahren ist auch der Kakaopreis nicht gestiegen.
Since the 1990s, real cocoa prices stayed below the $3,000 per ton mark. And this is what many commentators believe to be the level where cocoa farmers would have the possibility to have what could be called an acceptable livelihood.
Es gab eine Initiative, das Einkommen der Kakaobäuerinnen vom Weltmarktpreis zu entkoppeln.
And the living income differential was initially an idea to de-link the producer price from future markets, but this was rejected by multinational firms because it opposes their pricing strategies and most importantly, probably because it's likely to imply even higher prices. And instead, multinational firms agreed to pay $400 per ton on top of the cocoa future price. Cote d'Ivoire and Ghana agreed to pay a minimum cocoa price of $2,600 per ton. So of this, 70% would be received by farmers. So this would be quite below the $3,000 mark.
Hannes Groß führt neben dem niedrigen Einkommen weitere Herausforderungen im Zusammenhang mit der Kakao-Wertschöpfungskette aus: Entwaldung und Kinderarbeit.
The global cocoa industry and governments agreed on the so-called Harking Engel Protocol, in which they declared the intention to end the worst forms of child labor and forced labor. And the International Cocoa Initiative, ICI, was established to actively support this intention. And since 2010, progress and the elimination of child labor is monitored scientifically. And the latest report stems from the National Opinion Research Center, NORC, at the University of Chicago. So according to NORC, 1.5 million children were working on cocoa farms in the respective cocoa season. 95% of these children were exposed to so-called worst forms of child labor, like working with sharp tools, working long hours, night work, or carrying heavy loads. 94% were working for the parents or close relatives.
Rund 1,5 Millionen Kinder arbeiten in Ghana und der Elfenbeinküste in der Kakaoproduktion. Es habe sich gezeigt, so groß,
that the number of children working in the cocoa sector increased over the last years rather than decreased.
Zur Entwaldung merkt Groß an.
For a long time, the expansion of cocoa cultivation was promoted and incentivized without any consideration of deforestation. The absence of clear land and tree tenure further contributed to a widely uncontrolled dispersion of cocoa farms, also in formerly protected areas in those countries.
Es gebe Initiativen in Bezug auf Nachhaltigkeit, sagt Groß.
Speaking about industry self-regulation, we can differentiate three types or tools. In-house sustainability initiatives, third-party certification schemes, and sector-wide initiatives. Third-party certification schemes, such as Fair Trade, for example, have been considered as the central tool to reach sustainability in the cocoa and chocolate GVC since the late 2000s. As most of you know, certified cocoa ensures that farmers fulfill certain economic, social, and ecological standards. And farmers may benefit from certification through higher prices and also other non-monetary support. However, it must be also critically noted that the adaptation costs and investment risks, even though farmers are supported, largely lie on farmers.
Und Hannes Groß sagt zusammenfassend,
all of these types of self-regulations and initiatives might be important tools in improving sustainability in the cocoa sector, and successes are also to be shown. However, there are also major shortcomings. And just to give you an idea, the range, for example, with regard to certification schemes from certified cocoa produced in formally protected areas to the fact that not all cocoa produced under certification can be sold as such. And where individual programs have proven successful, such as child labor monitoring systems, it must be noted that they until now remain limited in light of the scale of challenges the cocoa sector faces. So what we have not seen in the last decades is a structural change within the cocoa and chocolate GVC, especially when it comes to the income of farmers. Even with certifications, no prices are currently being paid that could be considered a living income.
Und wie bewertet Hannes Groß nun die Ansätze der EU zur Etablierung einer Gesetzgebung zur Sorgfaltspflicht von Unternehmen anstatt freiwilliger Selbstverpflichtung? In zwei EU-Ländern gibt es bereits Gesetze zur Sorgfaltspflicht, nämlich in Frankreich und in Deutschland.
The implementation of an EU-wide regulation is not unlikely, actually. And in November 2021, the European Commission published its proposal on the one hand on a regulation on deforestation-free products, and only 1 month ago, it published its long-awaited proposal on a directive on comprehensive corporate sustainability due diligence.
Im Jahr 2002 wurde die ICI, die International Cocoa Initiative, begründet, eine gemeinnützige Organisation mit Sitz in Genf, die von großen Schokoladenherstellern finanziert wird und sich auf die Bekämpfung der Kinderarbeit in der Kakaoproduktion in Westafrika konzentriert. ICI hat schon im Dezember 2019 gemeinsam mit kakaoverarbeitenden Konzernen Forderungen in Bezug auf die Sorgfaltspflicht in der Wertschöpfungskette der Kakaoproduktion an die EU gestellt.
Calling for an EU due diligence legislation, which could create a level playing field, requiring all firms to invest in the context of what the Cocoa Coalition calls a necessary transformation of the sector to sustainability. The Cocoa Coalition is in favor of a rigid and comprehensive law that includes all companies, no matter of size, and provides for dissuasive penalties and access to remedies. And in addition, the coalition calls for bilateral cocoa partnership agreements between the EU and cocoa producing countries. And such agreements should promote an enabling environment for sustainable cocoa production on the ground and thereby increase the effectiveness of a potential EU due diligence law.
Sagt Hannes Groß. Friedel Hütz-Adams forscht für Südwind in Bonn zu globalen Wertschöpfungsketten und ergänzt im Rahmen der Podiumsdiskussion in Bezug auf die Preisgestaltung für Kakao.
One point was missing. On the world market, you have a certain price level from the stock exchange, and then you have often a quality differential. So cocoa from Ghana can be 200 or 300 euros above the price at the stock exchange. And what the government's planned was to add the $400 as a living income differential and increase the price for farmers by $400. But despite the fact that all major companies agreed on praising the living income differential, in the end, they combined their power and the government, the Cocoa Board in Ghana and the Cocoa Agency, the CCC in Cote d'Ivoire, they had huge difficulties last year and this year again to sell their cocoa on the forward market to stabilize prices there long before the season started. So rumors say that some companies put so much pressure on the two agencies that they bought cocoa without quality differential or even with a negative quality differential. So the same companies who say we need more money in the value chain took it away because they said, well, competitors are doing the same. And this is one of the striking facts in the sector, that everybody knows that you need to inject more money in the sector to improve things, but put the pressure on everybody who is down in the value chain. The same is true with certification and standard bodies. If you would ask in a closed room the people from Rainforest Alliance or Fairtrade, they would say, of course, we need a higher minimum price for Fairtrade, or we need higher premiums, which are both paying. But for the moment they increase minimum prices and premiums, it might happen that companies are not buying the certified cocoa anymore, but go into the cheaper non-certified or the company-owned certification systems. So prices all along the value chain are a huge problem, and this is why so many companies are in favor of a legislation. They know that we will not solve a problem on their own.
Hütz-Adams berichtet von den ganz konkreten Auswirkungen gesunkener Kakaopreise in Westafrika.
One more point to give you some of the dimensions in the sector. In 2016, in September, when the projections for the next starting harvest were that there would be a bumper harvest, the cocoa price within a few weeks went down $1,000 per ton, from 3,000 to below 2,000. A few months afterwards, I was in Cote d'Ivoire on a conference, and there was a woman which said that she's so fed up with the discussions about children's rights and child labor, because her option is either to send her children to school and not having them to help her harvest, meaning less cocoa, meaning less money, meaning no food on the table, or to send the children to work. At the same conference, many people in the industry praised themselves for all the projects they were doing, 50 million here, 20 million there. And I raised the question, well, you are offering 200, 300 million all in all, but due to the price decrease from one season to the other, $1,000 per ton, 4.5 million tons, you save $4.5 billion in your purchasing department. So these are the dimensions we are talking about.
Thanks a lot, Friedl, for also illustrating the dimension of these price differences and what it could mean for income of companies and what is also the relation between the money paid for programs, but the sum saved if the price is going down. But let me first introduce Michael Odigi to you. He's a research fellow at the University College London. He works on child labor issues, on slavery issues. He was also fellow on the Center of African Studies, and he focuses especially also on the links between child labor and political economy and historical relations.
I understand that the research is mainly on the value chain, but if you think of the cost of producing cocoa now and say 20 or 30 years back, there's a wide difference. There's even a difference in the cost of producing cocoa in Cote d'Ivoire, in Ghana, in Nigeria, in Cameroon. As you use the difference in price to explain deforestation and child labor in your work, you can equally use the difference in costs, the cost of producing cocoa, difference in labor. In Cote d'Ivoire now, farmers need sometimes 3 times or even 4 times more labor than they needed in the 70s and in the 60s and in the 50s. And go about why this is the case. Even if you increase the price and if the costs keep going up and up, you just have to keep on increasing the price. Maybe you just have to look into this question of cost, because one of the reasons why farmers are moving into protected areas in Cote d'Ivoire, it's so they can have access to virgin forests. The reason is because there's a difference. If you're farming cocoa in virgin forest, the cost of production is very low. So if you are replanting, you have to employ more labor. You have to invest more in terms of cost of production. And in my view, I think cost explains some of these problems, especially deforestation, more than price.
Im Jahr 1987 hat sich Elfenbeinküste für rund 2 Jahre vom Kakao-Weltmarkt zurückgezogen, um Einfluss auf die Preise zu nehmen, was nicht gelungen ist.
They came back in 1989 and just, you know, continued the way it used to be.
Sagt Michael Odice.
Sarah Dickisch is Director of Policy and Partnerships at the International Cocoa Initiative since last year, and she has worked for more than 10 years for organizations as CSR Europe or Amphora 2050, and has a lot of expertise in business and human rights issues and also human rights due diligence. Sarah, what is your take on the discussion on child labor and advancing human rights and sustainability issues in the cocoa value chain? And maybe you want to also comment on some issues that have already been raised in the discussion.
Sarah Dickisch bestätigt zunächst, dass der Kakaoanbau in den letzten Jahren um 62% angestiegen ist. Der Anteil von Kinderarbeit ist aber weniger stark angestiegen, so Dickisch.
The low income or the income issue is both a root cause but also a consequence of child labor. And it is absolutely clear that farmers should be making a decent living. And farmer income is an essential piece in the puzzle when it comes to tackling child labor. And the price paid for cocoa is, I think, one aspect of the whole equation that contributes to farmer income.
Eine Studie von ICI hat gezeigt, dass der Anstieg von Einkommen nicht automatisch Kinderarbeit im Kakaosektor reduziert, so Sarah Dickisch.
Generally, earlier also a number of things were measured, whether measures and efforts taken by companies, voluntary initiatives and regulation. And I think all these aspects taken in isolation are not enough. But what is needed is a little bit of everything. And I think that is key.
In der anschließenden Podiumsdiskussion gibt Michael Odice zu bedenken, dass eine Zertifizierung, die von einem Schokoladenhersteller selbst gemacht wird, eine Art von Greenwashing ist. Dazu Friedl Hütz-Adams.
In Germany, the industry says 80% of the imported cocoa is sustainable. It's pure greenwashing, and they define sustainable as being certified. Fairtrade and Rainforest, which are the biggest certifiers beside the company projects, they stress that the cocoa is not certified because they say we have no influence on prices, we have no influence on income. Still, some umbrella organizations of the industry on our websites and some companies on our website keep on lying and say our cocoa is sustainable.
Im Zuge der Podiumsdiskussion kommt Hütz Adams von Südwind in Bonn nochmals auf den zentralen Punkt der Bezahlung zu sprechen und führt aus, warum es eine EU-Gesetzgebung in diesem Bereich brauchen würde.
We have such a competitive market. I was once in a meeting here in Germany 10 years ago when a retailer, and at that time for a milk chocolate bar, the price entry in Germany was 35 cent. So the retailer wanted to go to certification and then the producer said it's 1 cent more per bar. The guy from the sustainability department of a company said, there is the problem. The lady responsible for purchasing it said, are you crazy? That's our margin. And when I said, well, increase the price by 1 cent, and all looked at me as if I'm crazy because they said, but our competitors are then cheaper than us. If you look into brands, brand producers where the bar is sold at a much higher level, of course, if you look at present cocoa price, it's for a 100 gram bar milk chocolate, 30% cocoa content, it's roughly 8 cent per bar, the cocoa in it. And about 5 cent of this are reaching the farmer. If you sell it for 1 euro, it would be no problem to double what the farmer gets. It's much more money for advertisements in this bar of chocolate than they spend on cocoa. But again, they are looking for a level playing field. Here in Germany, there is a magic line of 99 cent or special offers of 68 cents recently for Rittersport and Milka, I've seen. 69 cent, you know? And if you would tell Rittersport and Milka to spend 5 cent more per bar on cocoa, they would say, when we go bankrupt. But if they know that all competitors are also doing it, and when suddenly that the lowest price you get your special offers before Christmas and before Easter is not 69 cent, but 74, there is the problem. Everybody here in Germany can afford it. So this is why we need such a legislation, and this is why many of the chocolate and cocoa companies are in favor of the legislation. Because if you say it straight, for a Snickers or a Mars or a Kinder Schokolade, the price of cocoa, pure cocoa, is nothing compared to what they sell it for and what they spend on advertisements. And still, every cent counts. Mm-hmm. Human rights due diligence is one thing. Having the cheapest price is the more important thing presently, and the legislation can change this.
Jan, do you want to add on this? Will due diligence legislation change anything in the cocoa?
Yeah, I think the most important aspects have already been mentioned. I am also, I agree with what Frieda said. It is a step in the right direction, in particular with regard to, you know, to creating what could be called probably a level playing field and incentivizing companies that currently do not do enough to ramp up their efforts. So yeah, I think most of the important aspects have already been mentioned, and I'm also a little bit more optimistic. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, in our presentation, I mean, our key critique is, of course, that the impact on prices is likely to be relatively low. And so that remains a big issue, of course.
Moderatorin Karin Kübelböck reicht eine Frage aus dem Publikum an die Runde weiter.
Andreas is asking, why can't companies agree jointly on a higher price?
Well, if one point is functioning in Europe and specifically in Germany, it's the anti-cartel legislation. Every meeting we have with companies in the German Initiative on Sustainable Cocoa, we get, there's a paragraph read that we don't talk about prices, margins, profits, and so on, because according to cartel laws, if three big companies would meet in a room and decide, well, we double the cocoa price, they would go to jail. It's allowed to have child labor in your value chain or even slave labor in European legislation, but it's not allowed to have cartel agreements. So companies have to be very careful. The way you can go and step around is, and this is why we did this, I was part of some of the things, we calculated a living income for Cote d'Ivoire and Ghana. And a single company, they can go now and say, well, our farmers are earning half of what we need. How much do I have to increase the price? What support does the farmer need? What support measures as a premium or as a social welfare money or what else? This is allowed. Every single company can do this. And if they have to obey to a legislation, we will have to do it. But the moment they meet in a room, they run into a major problem. Civil liability, yes, of course. NGOs are waiting for this. They have to make value chains transparent. And if you know that there is persistent child labor, persistent malnutrition, persistent slave labor or something on a certain farm, and they are in the value chain of a certain company, of course, NGOs, lawyers will need this to sue companies.
Sagt Friedel Hütz-Adams, der am 30. März neben Sarah de Kisch von der ICI, der International Cocoa Initiative, und neben Michael Odice an einer Online-Podiumsdiskussion über die Kakao-Wertschöpfungskette teilgenommen hat. In dieser Ausgabe von C3 Radio haben wir über die Online-Konferenz »Was getan werden sollte, um Nachhaltigkeit in der Kakao-Wertschöpfungskette zu stärken und welche Rolle kann die EU-Due-Diligence-Gesetzgebung spielen?« berichtet. Im Rahmen der Konferenz haben am 30. März 2022 Hannes Groß und Jan Grumiller von der ÖFSE ihre aktuelle Studie zum Thema vorgestellt, die genauso wie ein Research Report der beiden auf www.ofse.at abgerufen werden kann. Und man kann in der C3-Bibliothek zum Thema recherchieren, siehe www.zentrum3.at. Dort findet man auch Informationen zu allen Angeboten im C3-Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung in der Sensengasse 3 und auch diesen Veranstaltungshinweis. Am 31. Mai mit Beginn 18 Uhr werden die Preisträgerinnen der diesjährigen Ausschreibung des C3 Awards ausgezeichnet. Im Rahmen eines Festaktes werden die ausgewählten vorwissenschaftlichen Arbeiten vorgestellt und prämiert. Wir werden in einer unserer nächsten Ausgaben von C3 Radio berichten. Den C3 Radio gibt es wieder in einem Monat auf Radio Orange 94.0 und als Podcast auf Spotify. Dort kann man ständig auf unsere Sendungen zugreifen. Folgen Sie C3 Radio und der ÖFSE bitte auch auf Facebook. Auf Wiederhören sagt Jürgen Planck. C3 Radio aus dem Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung. Mit den Organisationen Baobab, Frauensolidarität, Mattersburger Kreis, ÖFSE und Paulo Freire Zentrum. Weitere Informationen und Podcast auf www.zentrum3.at.